from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
A member of Congress is calling on the Department of Justice to investigate an anti-Christian state agency in his own state. Also, the Constitution takes center stage, both in a Senate hearing and with our listeners. That's all coming up on the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. The confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh kicked off this week, and they were contentious from the start and included a threat of civil disobedience by one Democrat senator that ended up being nothing. On Tuesday of this week, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins was joined by Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, who is a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you. I guess the protesters can always get a job with Nike. They seem to be in that stuff.
It was amazing. I understand this was orchestrated. Senator Schumer and others had a conference call.
It was really stupid because, again, these people stood up and yell. I mean, the election's over. Election has consequences. But here's what I want your listeners to know. This is a fine man. He's going to get confirmed. He's exactly who you'd expect a Republican president to pick. He's the greatest mind of his generation legally, Brett Kavanaugh. Outstanding judicial record, conservative judge. The people that we would choose from, he's at the top of any list. So what are the Democrats saying? Kamala Harris, fine lady, like her a lot. She says, you've lived your life as a partisan hack. You're nothing but an ideologue. Who do they pick, Tony? Justice Breyer, do you know who he worked for? He's a fine man. He worked for Ted Kennedy.
Right.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg was the general counsel of the ACLU. Where do they go to pick their judges? They go to their liberal bench. We have a conservative bench. They claim foul when President Trump says, I'm going to pick judges who will overturn Roe v. Wade. What did Clinton say during the campaign? I want a Supreme Court that will stick with Roe v. Wade and a woman's right to choose. We need a Supreme Court that will stand up on behalf of women's rights. It is important that we not reverse Roe v. Wade. I have a bunch of litmus tests, because the next president could get as many as three appointments. We've got to make sure to preserve Roe v. Wade, not nibble away at it. This is Hillary Clinton. It's okay for her to say these things. What you should do is pick a judge who will look at a case in controversy and apply the law to it. That's what Kavanaugh will do. The hypocrisy runs deep. When Clinton was being investigated, they never called to stop hearings for Breyer.
Right.
Okay. So enough already.
Yeah, and it was interesting, the four points that repeatedly came up. You mentioned Roe v. Wade. They wanted to talk about Roe v. Wade, reproductive rights. They wanted to talk about the environmental issues.
They promised to pick a judge that would never reverse it. That's what she said three times.
And they talked about the Second Amendment, and they talked about Obamacare. The four areas that they've been relying upon the courts to do their work because the legislature's not there.
Okay, Dianne Feinstein, nice lady. She is genuine about her feelings about assault weapons bans and high-capacity clips. She introduced legislation in 2013 to ban assault rifles, and it was 60 no votes, including 16 Democrats. They can't win at the ballot box. They can't win legislatively, so they turn into the court. And this is so odd. When Clinton's under investigation, it's okay for him to pick a Supreme Court judge, not for Trump. When they get to pick people to, on their side, they go to people who've been working for Democratic politicians. It's not okay for us to pick people from the Republican lane. This is really absurd.
You talked about his record. You say he's the most qualified, and you said if there's anything Donald Trump has done that he's done right, it's the picks that he's made for the courts.
He's done a lot right, but these two are the best.
And you said that today in the hearing. The fact that his 12-year judicial record, where he has over 300 opinions, that was mentioned about 26 times. What was mentioned the most, first off, he had 69 mentions of Donald Trump, you had 63 interruptions, and you had 129 complaints about documents. Now, you got 500,000 documents, and I doubt that they've read a tenth of those. But here's my point, Senator Graham. This is the same party of Nancy Pelosi that had to pass a 2,300-page Obamacare bill and then read it. And they're all now concerned about reading a million pages of documents before they can take up the hearings of Brett Kavanaugh. Something's not right there.
Number one, he went through confirmation back in 2006. They looked at his record then. We've given more documents to the Democrats for Kavanaugh than the last five Supreme Court nominees combined. He's had 307 decisions. It's not like he's going to sneak up on you. If there was ever a well-defined judge in America, it's Brett Kavanaugh. Defined in a way that you and I like. Nobody on the left would have picked him. Right? Nobody on our side would have picked Sotomayor and Kagan. All of a sudden, it's okay to lose an election, but it's not okay to pick a conservative. What do you expect a conservative Republican president to do? Pick a Brett Kavanaugh. They're trying to basically overturn the election through this process of interruption, and we're not going to let them do it. Brett Kavanaugh is going to be on the Supreme Court.
In the point that you made, you said that you voted for Sotomayor and Kagan. I testified against Kagan as one of the outside witnesses in her hearing. You voted for both of them. You said you took a lot of grief. I'm not going to say
the word
you said.
I thought they were qualified, but the game has changed, right?
And that's what you said. They were qualified for the post. You didn't agree with them politically, ideologically, but they were qualified for the post. That's not the case now. This is not about the qualifications.
Absolutely not. Those days are over. Scalia got 96 votes. Ginsburg got like 97 votes. We're in a land of partisanship. Advising consent in the Democratic world means a Republican president can't choose a qualified conservative. That's what they're telling the country.
Let me ask you about this, Senator Graham, because I, you know, as I was watching the hearings, I was not in the room, but as I was watching the hearings, it was unprecedented, a number of interruptions today in the committee hearings as members were trying to make their opening statements. Was there any discussion about clearing the room and not having the audience?
Well, Senator Grassley's done a marvelous job of being more than fair. Again, more documents given in the Kavanaugh nomination than the last five Supreme Court nominees combined, very tolerant when it came to the people in attendance. But we've got a country to run here. There, you have the right to free speech, but you can't see fire in the theater. Isn't there a right to listen? I mean, at the end of the day, this probably hurt their cause. It didn't help it. If you're looking for anarchy, then they're representing anarchy.
I agree. I hope that all of America will take just a moment to see if it's just the highlights of today's hearings, because I think it shows the desperation of the left and what they will do to try to take power in this country and how they will use it. I think the president touched on this last week when he was talking to evangelicals about the intensity of the left to undo everything that's been done in the last 2 years, which includes the economy. I think people should take note. This is not just about Brett Kavanaugh in the Supreme Court. This is about a left who feels entitled to run this country, and they don't like the direction it's going.
Well, they can't win at the ballot box, and they're losing the narrative, so they're shouting. The louder you shout, probably the less you have to say. The bottom line here is that President Trump has chosen wisely twice. I hope he does get another pick. He's done an outstanding job, and I told my Democratic colleagues, elections have consequences. I hope we understand that. If we lose in 2020, they're going to pick the most liberal people they can find, and everybody will applaud them for it.
Yes, absolutely. The confirmation process, will it conclude before the end of the month? You think you'll be on the court?
Oh, definitely. I mean, there are 100 senators. There are only 11 undecided. They've got enough already to vote no. 41 Democrats have said they would vote no. You've got 3 Republicans that are undecided. I hope they'll vote for Kavanaugh. I believe they will. You couldn't have chosen better from our side. And the 8 Democrats have political calculations. I think we'll get about 55 votes for Kavanaugh. And I said this, if you're a Democrat running for president in 2020 and you voted for Kavanaugh, you wouldn't get 1%. So this is how sad it's become. Yeah. And if you don't agree with Hillary Clinton's statement about Roe v. Wade, you might as well not run. So, you know, we're going to get this man confirmed.
We are definitely a divided country when it comes to not just
parties. Yes, we are, and he's a good choice from a Republican point of view.
Senator Lindsey Graham, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks for coming on and giving us the play-by-play from today.
Stay tuned. Thanks.
You can find out more about Senator Lindsey Graham as well as Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation hearing when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider donating to the work of Family Research Council by simply clicking on the Donate button. That website, once more, is TonyPerkins.com.
Are you ready to take a stand? Well, now you can with FRC's new Stand Firm mobile app, which allows you to stay engaged and informed on the most important issues facing our country. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on issues of faith, family, and freedom with just the tap of a screen. Listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and much more. Join Christians across America as we stand firm together. Visit frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. After cake artist Jack Phillips won his religious liberty case at the Supreme Court earlier this summer, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission targeted him again. Congressman Doug Lamborn from Colorado's 5th Congressional District has decided enough is enough and has requested that the Department of Justice investigate the commission for violating Jack's civil rights. Joining Tony to talk about his request is Congressman Doug Lamborn.
Doug, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's always good to talk with you and your listeners.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, and thank you. I know that you stepped out after the Attorney General announced his task force for religious freedom design, which was a part of really the president's call and his executive order to protect religious freedom. You said, look, here's a prime example of how a government entity is attacking someone's Orthodox Christian faith. So what's the status of your inquiry with the Attorney General?
Well, I just filed it the other day, Tony, so we haven't gotten a response back yet, but I'm optimistic that the Department of Justice will look into what I think are outrageous discriminatory acts by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission.
Well, in the testimony before the United States Supreme Court in the previous case, that bias was evident in the descriptive terms and the negative statements that were made about Jack Phillips' faith. So it was clear that they were not a independent, unbiased, objective body. They look like they have an agenda.
They really do, Tony. I think they're out of control, and they really need to be investigated. You know, if the tables were turned, if someone went to a gay baker and said, hey, make me an anti-gay cake, that person would turn him down, and no one would say anything. No one would think twice about it. And the Civil Rights Commission undoubtedly would not hammer them like they've done now that with Jack Phillips, now that the roles are reversed.
You know, I have some, you know, beyond the Jack Phillips case, I have some concerns with commissions like this that, as you make reference to in your letter to the Attorney General, you know, they have a near monopoly on the way these things operate. And in fact, they're almost, it's like they're judge and jury. They can make up regulations, rules. They can go after people for violating these rules, and then they can penalize them for the rules they violate.
Well, and besides all that, Tony, they are unelected. They're not accountable to the voters in any way at all. And so I think that feeds their arrogance and their sense of empowerment.
Right. It's a 7-member commission supposed to be bipartisan, appointed by the governor. And I assume confirmed by the Senate. I know you were in the Senate in Colorado a number of years ago before joining Congress. So I assume that are they confirmed by the Senate?
I believe they are, yes.
Now, this the power that they've been given, though, is quite, troubling. As I said, they can make these rules, they enforce the rules, and they adjudicate. I mean, you go before them, and they're the one. They're the judge, jury, and executioner.
Well, and that's exactly right. And they haven't learned their lesson. They were slapped down by the U.S. Supreme Court, like you said, a 7-2 decision, and yet they've learned nothing from that. They're turning around and pretty much on the same basis as before, going after Jack Phillips once again. And remember, if your visitors don't know this, Jack Phillips will sell anything in his store to anyone who walks in the door. There's
right.
absolutely no discrimination. It's just that when someone asks to have a special creation made using his artistic expression, that he seeks the right to use his religious beliefs as to whether he does that or not. But everything else is fair game for anyone to buy, who, no matter who they are.
I mean, Congressman Lamborn, let me just ask you. I mean, the Supreme Court slapped down the Civil Rights Commission 7-2, but then they immediately began to pursue other charges against Jack Phillips. I mean, this looks like they're retaliating against him because he won before the Supreme Court.
That's the way it looks to me, and that's why I've called on the Department of Justice to investigate what appears to me and appears to you to be anti-religious hostility. And that is totally against what they're supposed to stand for.
Well, Congressman Lamborn, we certainly want to follow this. And when you get your response back from the Department of Justice, I'd be happy to have you come back on and talk about this, because I think this is something people across the country need to be aware of, what these commissions are doing and how they're trampling upon these fundamental freedoms. So, Doug, thanks so much for joining us today.
We'll talk to you soon.
To find out more about Congressman Doug Lamborn or Jack Phillips, just head over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, and you can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'll be right back with more Washington Watch right after this.
If you're like me, you care a lot about where our country is headed. With so much at stake in America, do our leaders have a way forward? To find out, mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans that want to preserve and protect religious freedom, family values, and the sanctity of human life. Invited and confirmed speakers include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Sam Brownback, Ben Carson, Kellyanne Conway, Mike Pompeo, Laura Ingraham, Oliver North, Dana Lash, Todd Starnes, and Mark Levin. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. I don't know if you saw it, but during Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation hearing, Senator Ben Sasse said that we needed to bring back Schoolhouse Rock, which was a short cartoon series that may be best known for explaining how a bill becomes a law. With that in mind, here's constitutional expert and lawyer Ken Klukowski with a lesson on the Constitution.
Professor Ken Klukowski, welcome back.
Tony, thanks for having me.
I just know how your mind works. You capture all these facts and figures. You know every court case going back to 1789. Let's talk about the way today unfolded. Has there ever been anything like it, with the number of interruptions from the audience and the obstruction from the members of the minority party?
No, there has not. I saw, and I don't know if the counter has been updated since then, but there were a couple sources that were tracking the number of interruptions, and the last count I saw was 62, which you think more about a State of the Union address where the president's getting interrupted by applause. Absolutely not. And as Senator Mike Lee explained during his remarks today, which were more academic and historical, where he pointed out that the first time the Senate even held a hearing on Supreme Court nominees was actually the year 1916. That's 1-6, not 6-0, when over half of the nominees in American history had never received a hearing because of so many 60-some that happened from the founding of the country through 1916. And he said that the first time that a nominee actually appeared before the Senate, they had 20 years of hearings without actually hearing from the nominee. The first time that anyone actually heard from a Supreme Court nominee was in the 1930s. So the Republic, I think these hearings can be very valuable. I wish they could go back to the days or maybe be elevated to the point where they could be great civics lessons about what the Constitution is about and what the American form of government is about, but that for most of our republic's history, you didn't have any of these hearings, so certainly you couldn't have had any interruptions. In the decades that we have had hearings, the hearings have, for the most part, they have been short, not multi-day, they have been short, they've been collegial. There's been some light humor. I mean, it was a serious discussion, but it was done between people, including from both parties, in good faith. What we saw today was just extraordinary, and what is shocking and I think shameful about it is not that it was just some ill-mannered grassroots activists screaming at the top of their lungs from the back of the room, but it was what actually leaked during the committee hearing. Tweets were read and whatnot saying that there were Democratic senators on a conference call over the weekend where they planned this, where this was deliberately premeditated by people elected to the U.S. Senate so that it could teed up, as Dick Durbin said, that what we're hearing is the noise of democracy. Well, it's the noise that he actually whipped up with his buddies to be mean and disruptive and to shout horrible things and just to try and blow up this whole process.
All right. We're going to take some phone calls here, Professor Klukowski. And so I want you to put on your professorial hat. As class is in session now. 866-372-7234, and let's go to Rodrigo in that Illinois or Iowa. In Iowa. Rodrigo, go ahead.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. Question and clarification, but it is my understanding, according to our Constitution, that judges are not technically a lifetime appointment, but aren't they an appointment until they retire or until they no longer are doing a good job, or I should say, until they're no longer fulfilling their duties? Is that
no? The term in the Constitution is that they will hold their offices during good behavior. That's the exact wording. And ever since the first judges, ever since the 1700s, the understanding with the framers was that what good behavior meant was that they were not engaged in serious criminal activity. So the way we've always understood that for the past more than two centuries has been that if a judge gets convicted of a felony, not even a misdemeanor, and not accused of a felony, but actually convicted of a felony, then that person is impeached by the U.S. House and removed by the U.S. Senate unless they have the decency to resign. In U.S. history, there have been, I believe, 15 judges who have been impeached, and seven, have been removed from office, such as, for example, I'm thinking of one judge who got removed after being convicted of bribery, and then he got elected to Congress and now serves as a Democratic congressman from Florida.
Yeah, so. But, Rodrigo, the Constitution does not state a term of office for them, so it has been interpreted to be lifelong, a lifetime appointment.
Lifelong unless they become convicted as serious criminals.
Right, and my point earlier is that the Supreme Court is a creation of the Constitution. The lower courts are created by Congress because they're given the authority to create them.
Yes.
All right, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Mary in Kansas. Mary, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, my question is, can the president, does he have the authority to do like an executive order or whatever to stop the co-ed bathrooms that are endangering our kids to start doing misbehavior more from both sides, girls or boys, threats of misbehavior, because right now everything's going to the left, and the federal funding coming in should be for all the people in that district. They either should be allowed to vote if that's what they want in their schools, or the president should step in and say, we are going to harm the kids. I want to see if he's got a way of stopping this to the goes through the legal system.
Well, I appreciate your question. The short answer is no. Congress could do that. When it comes to whether someone could forfeit federal funding for it, Congress could amend its funding laws to attach that sort of conditions. All an executive order can do, because we don't live in a monarchy, the president is not a king. An executive order is where the president orders the federal employees who work under him in the executive branch of the federal government, where he can order them to do or not do certain things to better carry out Congress's laws, Congress's functions. So executive orders actually have very little scope along those lines. Education is mostly a state issue, so that's left to state and local control. And again, the only real hook that you have is through federal funding, and that's something where Congress controls the purse strings. That's why the guidance documents that the Obama administration had put out were such a radical expansion of executive authority when they were trying to cram transgenderism down the throats of local schools, that there is no conservative way to do it through direct presidential action.
Mary, thanks so much for the call. The issue there is it comes down to local school board and parents there locally. Now, as Ken, as you were saying, the Obama administration put out the letter of instruction or intent, whatever they called it. It really didn't have the force of law, but knowing how they operated, it intimidated schools into that policy. That was all rescinded by the Trump administration. So the Trump administration has done everything they can do to bring it back to basically equilibrium. Now you have, like in Kansas, you are not in Kansas City, you had the local school making this decision, and that's where the parents, and as conservatives, you know, we don't want all-intrusive, all-powerful federal government. We want the state and local governments to have most of the authority and the ability to allow people to determine the path that they want their communities to take.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.